Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today for this production of the Daily Journal. Lots of other podcasts you can search for as well. We'll get to that in just a minute. We're going to talk Ole Miss and Mississippi State for the next half hour or so. The Rebels and Bulldogs both trying to distance themselves from disappointing SEC losses over the weekend. State will try to do that on the road. Ole Miss will be at home. Logan, how are you, man?
I'm sleepy, Parrish. Long weekend in Baton Rouge, and just haven't slept a whole lot over the last 5 or 6 days. So I'm trying to catch up on some sleep. And yeah, it's a rare occasion that we're recording on a Wednesday, and it's a rare occasion that we're actually recording together. We're actually in the same room this time.
It is. It is. And you don't get a lot of sleep when you stay in Covington for the LSU game, man. But I know hotel rooms are probably still hard to come by down that way because of the flood. You know, I'm reminded of the flood as we continue to work on my mother's house, and my mother's living with us for a while, so it's still a different world down there in the Baton Rouge area. Folks, before we move on, I want to remind you of some podcasts you can search for, other productions of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, All Things Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And for all your high school sports needs, check out Prep Rally with Brad Locke, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan. That comes to you every Wednesday. Logan and I are preparing a little bit ahead of time this week, but you can find us each Thursday with Double Coverage. Logan, let's talk a little bit about the LSU game first, and then we'll get to State's game against UMass. But look, really, before we get into the football, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on with Mississippi State AD Scott Strickland?
Well, right now, as we're recording this, still kind of in a holding pattern. Obviously, Florida's very interested in Scott Strickland, has already made the offer to him. You know, we believe that he's already been offered and turned down the position and been reoffered the job again. So that's kind of what I've heard through the grapevine. Obviously, Florida has a lot of money to throw at Scott Strickland, and that's obviously intriguing. I don't think Scott Strickland necessarily wanted to leave Mississippi State or wants to. But, you know, when you have a chance to double your salary, obviously anybody is going to be interested in a situation like that. Obviously, Florida has a lot to offer, a lot of success in their sports programs, and a lot of money. Not only would Scott be doubling his own salary, he'd also be doubling his budget in an athletic department, probably even tripling in some occasions. So he would be going from one of the smaller SEC budgets to one of the larger SEC budgets overnight if he does take that position. So it's one of those situations where, you know, I think he's wrestling around with it right now. Like I said, I don't think he necessarily wanted to leave Mississippi State. It's obviously where he went to school. He has family there. He's the son-in-law of Bailey Howell, so obviously his wife has ties to Mississippi State as well. They have two small children, so it's something he's wrestling with right now. It's obviously a decision he's got to make that's going to affect his entire family.
Well, maybe money becomes a factor, Logan. Maybe money becomes the tipping point, and that is what causes Scott Strickland to take on this challenge at Florida. Maybe it works out that way. But I'll tell you this. Every spring, Mississippi State and Ole Miss get a check from the SEC for what is now $32 or $33 million because of the SEC network. Membership has its privileges. I don't believe money is an issue anymore for State and Ole Miss if they want to pay their employees. You obviously have to pay football coaches in order to compete. You've got to pay a certain salary just to attract the kind of coaches you have to have in the conference these days. You know, ADs really, I don't want to say they're underpaid. I think salaries in a lot of places are out of whack. But when you compare the AD, who is the boss, to the football coach, I mean, that's a big difference. You know, your AD's making around $500,000 in a lot of places, and then your football coaches are over $4 million. I think that SEC network check, man, it makes a big difference. If State and Ole Miss want to pay the salaries to keep their ADs, they can do that. Maybe there are one or two amenities at a minor sport somewhere that that they're not able to accommodate. But if State wants to pay the money to Scott Strickland, they can do that. You know, Florida, they got a bigger budget. Put some pressure on Florida. You know, make them go even higher if they want to get into a bidding war there. But if it becomes about the money for Scott Strickland, I do believe that State, if they wanted to make that decision, could keep him.
And what I was looking at, some stuff last night, looking at a 2013 thing that USA Today did, they ranked every AD at all the Division I schools, and Scott Strickland was making $450,000, which, you know, I would be glad to make. But obviously, you know, Jeremy Foley at Florida, who's retiring on October the 1st, was making $1.2 million. So he was more than doubling what Scott is making at Mississippi State. But I do think, you know, Mississippi State will make a competitive offer to keep Scott Strickland around. Like you said, if it does come down to money, I do think he can get a raise out of this. I think they'll, you know, be competitive in there. I don't know that they can afford to pay the same amount as Florida, because, like I said, it's a little bit bigger budget there. But, you know, I do think Mississippi State will do all they can to keep him around. And Scott will listen. I mean, he like I said, I don't think he definitely wants to just pack up and move. I mean, it's not something, you know, Florida came to him. He didn't go to Florida.
Well, I do expect to make $500,000 here at the Journal, Logan, and I expect to make that by the time I'm 103. Okay. All right, let's talk about these games a little bit. Let's start with Ole Miss this week. The Rebels, you could see this coming on the schedule. Logan, you look, you saw Florida State and Alabama within the first 3 weeks of the season. In spite of what happened to Florida State in Louisville on Saturday, I think when the dust settles, that's going to be a very, very good team. Alabama, you know, I look at them right now and I see a number one defense and an offense that may be better in 4 or 5 weeks. You know, I think they'll get better offensively. But you look at these games for Ole Miss and they were there. They were competitive. People focus on the big leads. You get three touchdown leads, you got to close the deal. They haven't been able to do that. But the bottom line is they were able to compete in these games, and they have had self-inflicted damage. They've had turnovers. They've had key penalties against Alabama. They had a breakdown in special teams as well. These are mistakes that if Ole Miss cleans up, they could be the kind of team that they thought they were going to be back in August. That a lot of people had this team as an outside contender, you know, for the SEC championship, an outside contender for a playoff spot. They can be that kind of team if they clean up a few mistakes. I look at this Alabama game. They lose 48-43. They put 43 points on a very, very good defense. Last year when Ole Miss won 43-37 in Tuscaloosa, Alabama had some turnovers. Their fans will point that out quickly. Ole Miss forced a lot of those turnovers, but there were five in the game. Ole Miss needed those turnovers to win in Tuscaloosa last year. This year, if Ole Miss doesn't turn the ball over itself, they beat Alabama by two touchdowns. I mean, that's how explosive this Ole Miss offense has been at times. But what the Rebels can't do, and you look at the schedule now, and to say it gets easier technically, I think it does, but they're still very good SEC football teams on the schedule, and that begins Saturday morning at 11 with Georgia. So how much easier, it's irrelevant, because if you continue to make these mistakes, you're going to continue to lose football games. But what I see in the losses to Florida State and Alabama is if Ole Miss corrects these mistakes, and I don't think it's that hard. I don't think they're that far from that. We're talking about protecting the football a little bit more. They've got to get better in special teams, and they got to get better in play calling as well. You know, they've got to remember what their personality is, and Hugh Freeze can't believe that when he can't run the ball consistently throughout the game, that he can run clock in the last 3 minutes with a couple of handoffs. That's not going to work, or it did not work against Alabama. But this is a team that I think is a few corrections away from being the kind of team that it thought it would be in August. But also, if it doesn't make those corrections, like I said, more losses will come. Georgia won't be easy. We'll talk more about that game in just a moment. Looking back at Mississippi State, LSU, what did you see?
Well, I saw the same pattern that I'd really seen in the first two games. And Mississippi State kind of has sort of the same issues that Ole Miss does. They're not blowing leads. They're just not playing well in different halves of football for Mississippi State. There, the first two games, they played really. It was 41-0 combined score in the first two games. They shut out opponents in the first half and gave up a lot of points. I think it was 35-6 they had been outscored in the second half. So hadn't produced a single touchdown in the second half of the first two games for Mississippi State, and obviously lost that game to South Alabama. Was able to score enough points in the first half to end up winning the South Carolina game. But in the LSU game, it was right the opposite. State struggled offensively in the first half and struggled defensively in the first half. Gave up some touchdowns to LSU. LSU led 23-3 at halftime. And Mississippi State put the clamps down on defense in the second half, played a lot better offensively in the fourth quarter especially, but played pretty well offensively in the third quarter too. Ended up making a game of it. They're very late. Mississippi State scored two touchdowns in 42 seconds later in the fourth quarter, and next thing you know, it's a ball game, which didn't seem like a ball game for much of that game. State ends up losing that game 23-20, and they had everything go right their way. You know, they scored a touchdown quickly, recovered the onside kick, scored another touchdown real fast, decided to kick off after that second touchdown was scored, got a three and out. LSU's punter just booted the crap out of the football and made Mississippi State drive the field, and State couldn't even move the ball for a first down. They went four and out on that drive. LSU gets the ball back, takes a knee, and that's the end of it. But it's a very young football team for Mississippi State, and I don't think I realized exactly how young State was until Saturday after that ball game. Dan Mullen said that they dressed – only 16 players that dressed out for the LSU game this year – also dressed out for the game 2 years ago down there. So only 16 players. So 54 players dressed out Saturday night in Baton Rouge that did not dress out the previous game. So it's a young football team. And I knew that they were young, but I just, when you throw that number out at me, it really just makes you realize exactly how young this team is. And they're improving. I mean, they've lost two ball games by a combined 4 points. So, you know, it's one of those situations where they've got to figure out how to close out some games, how to make some of those key plays. And in that LSU game, they had chances to win that ball game. They go down in the first – this is in the first half. They stop LSU's offense. They have to settle for a field goal. Well, they have a running into the kicker penalty. Well, that gives LSU a first down. They take those 3 points off the board. LSU goes down, punches it in the end zone with Leonard Fournette. And, you know, that's a 4-point swing there. Mississippi State loses that ball game by 3 points. So, I mean, that's a difference in the ball game just in that play. But Fred Ross dropped a touchdown in the end zone. Nick Fitzgerald made a wrong read. He had Aris Williams open on a wheel route, just wide open for a touchdown, and didn't even look his way. So, you know, there were some plays that could have been made in that ball game to change that outcome. But you're right now, Mississippi State's so young, they're not making those type of plays that they need to make.
Well, I tell you what, Georgia comes to Oxford Saturday, and the first thing I think about is Nick Chubb is healthy. But Georgia has been inconsistent with its running game the last 2 weeks. Chubb hasn't reached 100 yards. He had 222 against North Carolina. You thought, man, this guy's back. But Georgia's got some issues going on with their offensive line, and Kirby Smart was having to answer a lot of questions about his line play in his press conference on Monday. And he wasn't really happy with the questioning. It didn't sound like. I mean, it's almost, you know, the guy's been behind Nick Saban for 8 years or longer, really, going back to further stops. So it's almost like it was Saban up there handling the media. And it was funny to watch.
He didn't have a Coke beside him, did he?
Didn't have a Coke, didn't have water. But, yeah, there are a lot of the same mannerisms there. Bottom line is Georgia is not getting the offensive line play that it would like right now. Against Florida State and Alabama, Ole Miss struggled with allowing the quarterback to break containment and pick up some big yards on the ground. They're going to face, against Georgia, freshman quarterback, another one. They faced a redshirt freshman and a true freshman in their FBS games. Wofford had a more experienced player there. But they're going to face some type of freshman, in this case a true freshman, for the third time in Georgia quarterback Jacob Eason. Now, this is a guy who's going to stand in the pocket, okay, and he's not going to be protected all the time. Missouri sacked him four times last week. Georgia is tied with Auburn and Kentucky for the most sacks allowed in the SEC at 3.0 per game. So some opportunities there for Ole Miss to put some pressure on Jacob Eason. Now, there's a flip side to this, too. Eason's not going to run around and hurt you with his legs, but by staying in the pocket, he certainly has a chance to hurt you with his arm if you don't get there and disrupt him. And Ole Miss was not very good in the secondary against Florida State. A little better against Alabama, but they're still evolving back there. Still playing a lot of guys at cornerback. And one of those who could play at cornerback against Georgia will be senior wide receiver Derrick Jones. Hugh Freeze mentioned him a couple of weeks ago as a guy who could possibly change positions. And he would have changed earlier, I suspect, and maybe helped Ole Miss against Alabama had he not been suspended. But it looks like he and Jeremy Liggins, who was also suspended, will be getting on the field against Georgia. At least they were fully engaged in practice earlier this week, and Jones was in the Navy jersey working out at cornerback and not with the offense. Jones played corner a couple of years ago in 2014, so he's not completely new to it. It didn't work out as well as they wanted then, but maybe this is the time that he can help because they're not doing well at that position after the loss of Kendarius Webster against Florida State. I will say that Jalen Julius, the redshirt freshman who has come on, really, has taken over one of those starting spots. But a guy who started 10 games last year, Tony Bridges, a junior college transfer, you know, hasn't been able to win a starting job. So not only are they hurt at the position, they've got some guys just not performing as well as they need. But we'll see. Maybe Derrick Jones helps out at corner. And it's possible that we could also see freshman defensive end Charles Wiley. He was an early signee. Did some good things in the spring, was arrested later in the spring, and, you know, he's been suspended since then. But Chris Kiffin, the defensive line coach, told us he's getting Wiley ready to play, and if he regains his status as team member in good standing, we could see freshman defensive end Charles Wiley. The Rebels just need some bodies there. They're not going to have Fadal Brown back anytime soon, it doesn't look. And they were missing Victor Evans, a third-year sophomore, backup defensive end, missing him against Alabama from a concussion sustained against Wofford. They'll have Evans back, and he will help out a little bit, but they still need to get better play at the ends.
Yeah, Mississippi State's looking to get a couple of guys back as well, Parrish. Cedric Giles, the senior cornerback, who was listed going into the fall, was going to be a starter at cornerback. It's a possibility he could be back. He broke his arm in fall camp, hadn't played at all this year. And that's really been an area Mississippi State struggled with in the first three games is at cornerback. They were just so young at that position. I mean, obviously, Talando Cleveland, another senior, is gone for the year, and they had pegged Cleveland and Giles to kind of be the starters at that position, and they've lost both of those guys, ended up having to start Jamoral Graham, who's a junior who started, like Derrick Jones, started off as a wide, well, he did right the opposite. He started off as a wide receiver and moved to cornerback. He's a first-time starter, and then LaShard Durr, who's a junior college transfer. They have had to start him the first couple of games, and then they've had to move Jamal Peters from safety to cornerback just to get some numbers back at that position when you have two guys go down and you were going to be young at a position anyway. They lost both of their starters from a year ago. So obviously the guys that are starting this year, one guy wasn't even on the team, and you know the other starter, Jamoral Graham, was a third-team guy a year ago. So he's jumped from third-team to first-team just in a few months. So it's a lot for him to take on. And he was the guy that got picked on in that first touchdown for LSU in that game on a post route. He bit on a fake and, you know, just couldn't catch up. And, you know, Etling laid it in there perfectly for that opening touchdown. But another guy they're looking to get back is Will Coleman. He's a viper for Mississippi State. He's a defensive end, outside linebacker. Will Coleman had
that sounds poisonous.
It does. They've got State. It's kind of stayed away from some of those gimmick names. But now
like
they're
Husky.
All these weird names. I mean, I know back in the 90s when you covered State Fairs, they had the dog safety and all those kind of things. But they stayed away from that up until this year. Now we have a star linebacker and a Will. Will is pretty common. Will and Mike are pretty common. Then you've got the Viper. Yeah. Which is a hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker. But Will Coleman had a back injury early in the first part of practice. We've only seen two practices, you know, the whole year, and that was the first 2 days. And, you know, Will Coleman goes down, you know, right after stretching. He just, you know, we see him go to the injury pit, and it was some type of back issue, and he's been out since then. They're hoping to get him back this week. Mullen kind of felt more confident about getting both of those guys, Cedric Giles and Will Coleman, back for the Auburn game. They have a bye week coming up after this game against UMass this week, and, you know, then they play Auburn on October the 8th, and he felt pretty good that he might have both of those guys back for the Auburn game, but there's a possibility they could make the trip this week, but he just wasn't really too sure earlier this week when he had his press conference. But, you know, looking at UMass, they're 1-2 on the season. They've actually played some pretty good competition. They lost at Florida on opening weekend 24-7. They've lost to Boston College 26-7, and then they got their first win last week against FIU 21-13. They're a team that's kind of rotated at quarterback. It's kind of been the theme for Mississippi State this year. Every team that they've played has kind of been fluctuating at quarterback, and I guess that'll continue even after this week because they've got Auburn coming up, and we know the situation there. They've had a lot of guys interchanged in there, but it's a long road trip for Mississippi State this weekend, and I think that's the biggest challenge for them to handle. Obviously, they should be a better team than UMass. But it's one of those situations where they're playing in an NFL stadium. They're playing at the Patriots Stadium there in Foxborough. And a lot of these guys have never even visited that part of the country, you know, let alone travel that far to play a game. We've talked earlier about how many new players Mississippi State had. I mean, this is 20 players have played this year that have never even debuted before, and 16 of those, I think, are freshmen. So it's a lot of new faces, a lot of new guys playing for the first time, and yeah, they're going to have to see how they handle this long road trip. I mean, it's obviously a haul to get from Starkville, Mississippi to Foxborough, Massachusetts. I think they're flying into Providence, Rhode Island. You know, probably a lot of guys have never been there. But it's a homecoming for Dan Mullen a little bit. He grew up in New Hampshire, about 80 miles from the Patriots Stadium. So it's going to be a homecoming for him, but definitely a really far away game for some of the Mississippi State players. So we'll have to kind of see how they handle that.
I like the jerseys. I like the uniforms they've unveiled for the game. What's the feeling about those?
I hadn't really heard a whole lot about them. Not a whole lot's been said as far as from the players and the coaching staff. They did have a mannequin dressed out on the other side of Dan Mullen when he did his press conference this week. And that was kind of a common thing that we had several years ago, but hadn't seen the mannequin broke out here lately. But it's a different look. It's kind of the same pattern that the Patriots use, which, you know, same number font on there. And I thought that was pretty unique that they kind of mimicked some of what the Patriots were doing. And obviously breaking out a silver helmet as well, which is something the Patriots have. So it's going to be a little bit different look for Mississippi State. But they've worn different uniforms in every game this year. So, I mean, it's really nothing new. But, I mean, introducing a silver helmet is kind of unique.
Well, it was a great atmosphere at Ole Miss for the Alabama game, Logan. You know, it was the first real game. You know, you count Wofford, but the first SEC game, first big-time game in the expanded, renovated Vaught-Hemingway Stadium with the bowled-in north end zone. And, you know, the stadiums go tit-for-tat, Logan. I imagine State will add something sometime, and they'll have the largest stadium. But right now, the capacity with the end zone bowled in is 64,038. Okay, that's capacity. So they had some standing room, and the announced crowd for the Alabama game at Ole Miss was 66,176, which I think is impressive because you and I both can remember these stadiums when they sat about 42,000 people.
Right.
So it was good to see, and it was a legitimate number because I'll tell you, I've covered Ole Miss and Alabama in that stadium when the crowd has been, you know, just a lot of Alabama folks. You know, they would fill up the designated visiting areas and then some. You know, they managed to find those tickets from Ole Miss fans who weren't going to the games. But that was not the case this time, and it was a sea of powder blue. Fans were asked to wear powder blue to the game. They certainly responded. So not a great result, but not bad play by the Rebels. Need to clean up some mistakes against teams like that, against all teams really, because a lot of difficult SEC games remain. But a very good atmosphere and a lot of folks there at the new Vaught-Hemingway Stadium, 66,176 people for Ole Miss, Alabama. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We thank you for clicking in with us today. Remember to check out the memo, All Things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Check out Brad Locke, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan for Prep Rally, all things high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. That's every Wednesday. And Logan and I will be back here with you next Thursday for Double Coverage for Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Come join us.